Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
AM 950, 95.7 FM, and streaming online at ESPNRochester.com and the ESPN Rochester app. The sports leader, ESPN Rochester.
Sports Bar, we only talk to the best and brightest minds in our industry. People that know their stuff, make you smarter just for listening to Rochester's most listened to sports station, ESPN Rochester. Last time we spoke to Sal Capaccio, the Bills were in the middle of trying to figure out whether or not they had a wide receiver too in Jeremy Maclin.
Yeah.
We know the outcome of that. And we also know that in not signing a guy like Jeremy Maclin, they maybe did themselves a favor salary cap wise. This great piece on ESPNRochester.com that Sal wrote that kind of explains how the Bills have improved their salary cap situation in a short amount of time. Hi, Sal. How are you?
Well, guys, I just got my milk, toothpaste, and diapers from my Target run, so I'm good.
Sal, thanks for your time. How much better is the Bills' cap situation today as compared to when things started out in March here?
Well, it's a lot healthier, as I wrote. It's a lot healthier. And look, I mean, there's still some work to do, but, you know, I think they're about league average now, really, is where it falls. And I think, you know, I'd say that's really good considering going into the offseason. And we're going to go back to February here. So you go back to the end of the season, and then before free agency, you go back to February. They pretty much guys had the third or fourth worst salary cap situation in the league as far as money that they had to spend or, you know, a few dollars available. But here's the problem. They had only 26 guys under contract at the time. They had 23, 24 unrestricted free agents they had to look at, some restricted free agents. Since then, they've gone from having just over $20 million available with over 20 guys still to sign to still now having $13 million available on 89-man roster.
It's impressive. And what do you attribute it to more than anything? I mean, is this really more about the moves that they didn't make or the moves that they did make?
That's a really good question. I think it's more the moves they didn't make. And, you know, as I pointed out, I think one of the under-the-radar things they didn't do in the offseason, I think this really can't be underscored, they didn't restructure any deals. Now, if we want to talk about Tyrod and count that, that's fine. But I would say that's because he actually took a pay cut. So he did them a favor. What I'm talking about is the typical restructure where you go to a guy and say, all right, well, this guy's making a lot on the cap this year. We need relief. Let's lower his cap number this year but give him more money down the road, cost us more in the salary cap in 2018 or 19. They did that to nobody this year. They did it to guys pretty much every year, two or three guys a year for the last several years. So I think one of the things they did this year that's going to help them for the long-term outlook is they're in a very good position going into 2018. Now, if without doing that, though, you'd say, well, I guess that would hurt them in 2017. But to your point, they didn't go out and they didn't sign really high-priced free agents. Their marquee guy was Micah Hyde. You know, mm-hmm. Micah Hyde signed a five-year, $35 million deal. He's going to be making some money. But other than that, they went out and got, you know, under-the-radar type of guys. And I said five-year 30 and a half, I think, is what the deal is. But they signed on Andre Holmes. You know, they let Robert Woods walk. You know, you could have – how many people said they need to re-sign Robert Woods? Well, that's fine. But are you going to pay Robert Woods $7 or $8 million a year to be your number two receiver? Are you going to pay that to Jeremy Maclin? Are you going to pay $4 million for Mike Gillisley to be your backup running back, which is what you'd have to pay this year on the salary cap? So I think – they did lose talent, guys, but I think they were smart about how they went about it. They didn't want to overpay for people. And in the last regime, they figured if this guy is a good football player, we'll overpay and we'll figure out how to do it, hence restructure other deals.
Sal Capaccio is the Bills sideline reporter, and you hear his work on WGR in Buffalo. Our guest here in the sports bar on 95.7 ESPN. So, Sal, if you are cleaning up your cap here, so to speak, and you mentioned guys not restructuring or not being asked to, two names that come out, Charles Clay being the obvious one, where, you know, next year, perhaps, if Clay with that knee, that's a concern, according to head coach Sean McDermott, that could be a player that could be put on notice if he doesn't perform. But what about Marcell Dareus? Because if Marcell Dareus is not restructuring, Sal, what happens to Marcell Dareus if he puts up another season in 2017 like he did in 2016?
You know, it's a good question. I think that the fact that they hired Mike Waffle to be the defensive line coach is a clear signal to Marcel Darius that he needs to fall in line. He needs to get with the program. And if he can't do that, I think that they are willing to move on. But it will cost them next year if they do that. The thing is, if they would have done it this year, some people wanted them to move on from Marcel Darius this year. I kept telling people, you can't do that. You're talking about over a $20 million cap hit. You just can't have a guy counting over $20 million on your team that's not on your roster. It's just irresponsible to do that, as much as the guy might not be doing what you hope. Now, let's say you get to next year and the same thing's going on. You can move on from him. The cap hit will be about $13 or $14 million, so I don't know if they would want to do that, but I think it's at least a lot more absorbable, and you know, if you want to justify it, I think you can do it in that situation based upon where your cap will be compared to where your cap was this year. I think the year that would do it would be the following year, but it is possible. I don't know. It's a really good question. I think it's something that Sean McDermott will have to answer. I'll say this for Sean McDermott. You know, if you're not a guy getting with the program, I don't know if he's going to care about how much money you make.
Right.
I think he's all about, you know, what you're bringing to the table, how much you're with what he's trying to do, and you're part of the long-term solution. So I think they would eat that money. Let's all hope, though, that Marcel Darius gets in line with what Mike Waffle wants, gets in line with what Sean McDermott wants, and now you have what I consider a guy who has Hall of Fame-type talent playing on your team in the prime years of his career, and I think that's really obviously the best solution. Now, as far as Charles Clay, look, if they were to move on from Charles Clay before the season started, they would save $4.5 million in the salary cap. Now you say, well, why don't they do that? Well, because it would still cost you another $4.5 million in dead money. He's cost $9 million. But the other thing is, Charles Clay is a good football player, guys. He's a good football player. I don't think Charles Clay's issues are Charles Clay. It's the fact that this offense and this quarterback have not been able to do what they should do with him. Now, is he making a lot of money? Yes. Is he overpaid? Yes. That was a product of trying to get him under the situation and circumstance in which he was in, and we can all say they shouldn't have done that. That's fine. But Charles Clay is not an injury concern, even though we talk about his knee. He missed one game last year, and that was for the birth of his child. He's a good football player. He was the leading receiver on this team last year. He was targeted 87 times. I think it's more about getting him involved and getting the offense and the quarterback to do that to at least justify more the money he's making, although we know he'll never, ever justify that contract. And I think it's unfortunate and unfair. People blame that on Charles Clay, but it's not Charles Clay's fault for his contract.
Sal Capaccio joining us in the Sports Bar, Danger and Battaglia. And I guess with the rosier picture that we're painting here with the Bills cap situation, it's easy to say that McDermott and Bean are starting to turn things around. There's one constant that we haven't really talked a lot about, and that's Jim Overdorff. I mean, if Overdorff is the guy that's, you know, behind the scenes and kind of working his magic, what's the difference between how Overdorff was being instructed then versus how Overdorff is being instructed now?
Well, that's a really good point you bring up. It's a great question, because I think if there's one thing that people get really mad about still, to me, it's that Jim Overdorff is still a part of this organization. So, look, I mean, sometimes I'll go on a radio and I'll get accused of, you know, being in bed and protecting this organization. But I try to be fair and I try to be honest with people. And I'm going to tell you fairly and honestly about Jim Overdorff right now, okay? Jim Overdorff is not the reason why the Bills have had the salary cap situation trouble that they've had. Jim Overdorff's job is at the direction of the general manager.
Right.
Jim Overdorff basically negotiates contract according to what the GM and or the head coach want and on the same page. And when I say that, what I mean is this. This is how you get into salary cap trouble, guys. Let me tell you how. You get into salary cap trouble by constantly changing over GMs and especially coaches and coming in with new schemes and new philosophies and saying, I have to have this particular player. So you tell Jim Overdorff, go sign me this guy. He fits my team. He fits my scheme, my philosophy, what I want. And so you have to pay for that guy. 2 years later, you get a new coach who says, I don't want that guy. He doesn't fit what I do. Well, guess what? You just signed that guy to a contract that you can't get out from under. But the new coach says, well, I don't want him, so I guess we got to keep him on the books because of the contract, but I do want this other guy over here. Now you got to do the same thing with somebody else while you're still counting the other guy in your books. That's what happens and how you get in this situation. I think what happened here, though, was basically McDermott and Bean, they came in and said, look, we have this roster here that we're going to kind of make sure that we don't bring guys back because of scheme, because of this. We just have a philosophy of we're going to build for 2018 and 19 and 20, not restructure any contracts. We think we still have good players that are on the field on this team, and we're not going to overpay for our own free agents, and we're going to go from there. But that's why Jim Overdorff, me, gets so much grief from people, and I understand it. He's the guy with the name on there when you hear about it, contract negotiator. You know, the guy that's in charge of all that. But it's really not him that's doing that. It's the philosophy and the scheme of the coaches and the GM who say, get me player X or Y or Z, and he has to continually do that and spin the wheels.
Yeah, and the numbers are the numbers, and he's the numbers guy. He's taking order from the GM, and it just kind of shines a magnifying glass on the differences between the past regime and the current regime.
Totally, exactly right. And look, and I'm going to say this. You know, this team is trying to build for 2018, 2019, and beyond, like I said. But make no mistake, they're going to try and win in 2017. And if they weren't going to do that, they wouldn't have brought back LeSean McCoy. At his age and his position and the number he has, they wouldn't have brought back Kyle Williams, especially with 1 year left in his deal when they could have really saved a lot of money there. There are other guys. Lorenzo Alexander is a great example. They wouldn't have re-signed him. He was an unrestricted free agent at the age of 33, but yet they re-signed him on a two-year deal. So they're going to try and win in 2017, but their philosophy of doing that was, we think we have good talent on this team. They need to be utilized better, and we're going to go and get parts around them that are cheaper. But really, the ultimate goal for this organization from these two guys now is to have sustained success and sustainability through 2018 and 19 and beyond. And look, next year, as I wrote in my piece, if you look at it, guys, according to overthecap.com, which is a good job of this, if you project out to a salary cap of where it should be next year in the league, the Bills have about $34 million available in cap space. And look, that counts Tyrod Taylor at $18 million. Now, what if they move on from Tyrod? He's going to cost $3 in dead money. He'll save you $15. Now you're looking at $49 to $50 million of cap space. Even if you have Tyrod on your team, it's $34 million, counting the contract he's under right now. And the only real free agents you have are Sammy Watkins, Eric Wood, and Kyle Williams, if he even wants to play anymore.
It's Al Capaccio, our guest here in the Sports Bar 95.7 ESPN. So 1 month from today, Sal, we'll have our first practice out at Fisher. And you brought up a good point about players from the previous regime. Is there a player or two that we'll be looking at this camp that maybe doesn't fit the current scheme or your coaching style, if you will, a holdover from Rex that you think may not make this team?
Well, that's a really good question. I don't know about if there's anybody who won't fit. I think the number one to look at, and I don't know, I'm not a cop-out because he's not a starter, but I don't know how Cardale Jones makes this roster. I mean, Cardale Jones was handpicked by Doug Whaley to be a backup quarterback on this team, and I just don't see him fitting. I mean, they went out and they got T.J. Yates. They drafted Nathan Peterman, and Cardale was getting fourth-team reps, essentially, during the two-minute portion of the OTAs and minicamps that I saw. He has an uphill climb. Short of injury, I think Cardale Jones is probably a guy that's going to be gone from this roster. I wonder what happens at the linebacker position with guys like Preston Brown and Reggie Ragland. I think Sean McDermott really likes Reggie Ragland. We don't know about his health, though, and his knee until he gets out there and he actually plays. And I don't, you know, there are some people who believe they would move on from Preston Brown. I mean, I guess that's a possibility, but I don't see it, guys. He's going into the final year of his contract where he's making really not much money at all. He's on his rookie deal. And he's essentially a starter on your team. He started all of OTAs and minicamp, and I think you need those guys. You don't know about Reggie Ragland's knee. So I guess if there was a surprise guy that, you know, if Ragland was healthy and everything came, you know, if Gerald Hodges played really well and Ramon Humber and those linebackers, maybe a guy like Preston Brown could be someone who gets squeezed out. But even then, I find that a little hard to believe.
Hey, Sal, real quick, back to the quarterback competition, the backup quarterback competition. I mean, there are people who would say that T.J. Yates, other than knowing the system better than any other quarterback on the team, doesn't offer a lot of upside and hasn't looked great. And you have at least more potential with Cardale Jones. Why would you keep Yates on this roster when it's down to the final cut?
And I may actually agree with some of those people. I do, but here's why. You have to, you know, my job when I project the team, when I project the cuts, the roster, things like that, obviously, as you guys would know, and just so listeners know, I'm not projecting what I would do. I'm projecting what the team will do. I'm projecting what they're going to do. And I try to put myself in the mindset of Sean McDermott. And here's what we know about Sean McDermott. Sean McDermott is not the kind of guy that's going to go into the season with Tyrod Taylor as your starter and then a rookie backup and then a second-year player who's really never played in this league except for a one half of football last year. Sean McDermott is going to want somebody that if something happens to Cardale Jones, to Tyrod Taylor, especially early in the season, he at least wants somebody who's played in this league to be able to steer the ship for a few weeks while he gets a guy like Nathan Peterman ready. So that's why I see that. I agree with people who might say that. And look, I don't know. I don't think Cardale Jones is ever going to be any type of starter in this league, but sure, he's got that big arm and maybe he does have some sort of potential. And T.J. Yates is a guy that, what does he really do? Doesn't move the meter? T.J. Yates has played in this league for a few years. He started and won a playoff game, and I think he's going to be the number two quarterback going into week one. I just think Nathan Peterman could beat him out after that, but going into week one and week two and early on, I think this coaching staff wants them to have a veteran behind Tyrod that if they get in a situation, they can use, and to make sure they have someone like that in that room for the other backup.
Sal, today on the John Murphy Show, Chris Brown was filling in, and they actually, I thought, had a really interesting topic about developmental quarterbacks and how it starters today, and you don't give these guys enough time. And to me, Sal, doesn't this just kind of underscore the need for a developmental league? Even if you could send Cardell Jones and go play in the spring and learn a little bit, how has the NFL not made this sort of investment?
Yeah, I mean, it would be great, guys, you know, but I mean, with major college football the way it is, the big time that it is, I just don't know if a league like that would ever really take off and be financially stable, because people love their college football. That's where the development really is. That's where the minor league is. It's funny, I just had this conversation via Twitter, actually, with some people the other day when the NBA draft was going on. You know, the NBA draft is so different than the NFL draft because the NBA draft is a prospects draft. It's closer to Major League Baseball, really, than anything, where you're really drafting a guy for 2-3 years down the road. And, yeah, I mean, guys can come in and get playing time the first year, but, you know, that's why they need a development league, you know. But the NFL, you're drafting guys for now. That's why. When you draft in the NFL, you're basically drafting guys now. They don't have much of a shelf life in that league because of, you know, the physical game that it is. There's 53 guys that have to make a roster, and I think that's why you do that. But, you know, you put a guy in a development league, sure, I mean, but what are you going to get after 2 years? Bumps and bruises and banged up and things like that. That's why guys are coming out of college as soon as they can to make sure they get into the league.
Oh, Sal, your piece on the Bills and their improvement in the salary cap is a must-read for any Bills fans. I encourage you to check it out, ESPNRochester.com. And as always, we appreciate you coming in and giving us some of your time this afternoon to keep us informed on what's happening this offseason with the Buffalo Bills.
All right, anytime, guys, and I look forward to training camp up there in Rochester soon.
1 month away.
That's
one
it.
Month from today.
Yeah,
Sal, can't wait. Appreciate it, Sal. Enjoy the rest of your day.
All right, you too, guys.
Sal Capaccio joining us with the Bills Inside Scoop, provided exclusively by Perry's Ice Cream. Life is a bowl of Perry's.
Yeah, and if you're just tuning in here, basically the gist that Sal lays out in his article, it's better. The Bills cap situation by showing some restraint. Not just, hey, we're not going to match that offer for Mike Gillisley. Hey, we're not going to pay that much for Stephon Gilmore. But just as important, we're not going to kick the can down the road with Marcell Dareus, and we're not going to restructure Charles Clay. Some of these other moves that you've done in the past, hey, they did a good job getting Tyrod to a number that's palatable. By doing all this, the Bills down the road are cleaning things up.
Yeah, this is more in line with, you remember the champagne taste hot dog wallet conversation, got everybody pissed off at me earlier in the offseason. Like, you're now showing some fiscal responsibility. You're not buying the Escalade when you're living in a two-bedroom shack. You know what I'm saying? You're spending where it makes sense to spend, and you're not going crazy buying things that are out of your price range. And everybody has a salary cap, but you're managing your finances. You're managing your salary cap the smart way. I like what they've done.
Well, you're not putting it on the credit card and not make sure you pay off. If I could draw an analogy, yours is champagne and hot dog. Mine is, hey, you have a credit card, pay off your darn balance at the end of the month. And if you don't, you're going to have problems. And the Bills are kind of always walking that line. You know, you shouldn't be in this position where you have, darn it, I forgot to ask that one question. They're at 89 guys. What are the Bills doing here with the 90-man roster? I don't know. To me, that's a clear indication that maybe, and you do have a little bit of room. I mean, they're leaving that open for a reason. Would you not think at this point that, okay, a Gary Barnage, here you go. Because to me, to not come to Fisher with a full complement of 90, it doesn't make sense. At the very least, you want to bring in some younger guy and give him a look here at this point. That's what camp is for. If I could, I'd bring in 120. You can give them all a look, see what flushes out. But you're only allowed to bring in 90. At this point, the Buffalo Bills have 89 men on the roster.
If you missed any of our conversation with Sal Capaccio, Buffalo Bills sideline reporter, we'll have that up for you and on demand shortly at the all-new ESPNRochester.com and also on demand on the ESPN Rochester app. Okay, next in the sports bar, we play I'll Drink to That, give you some sports comments to agree or disagree with. You're always welcome to pull up a stool and join us here in the sports bar at 454-ESPN, 454-3776, also on Twitter, at ESPNRochester.com. An ex-Buffalo Bill is trashing another ex-Buffalo Bill.
Yeah, this is Bills on Bills crime.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's this
next.
Is whoa.
I'll drink to that in the sports bar on the way next. ESPN Rochester.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.